Today we are reading from Canto 1, Chapter 13, Dhritarashtra Quid Song, text number 8. Yudhishthira Uvacha, Api Smartha no Yushmat, Prakshachaya Samedhidan, Vibhadganad Vishagnyadir, Mochitaya Samatrikaha, Yudhishthir Uvacha, Api Smartha no Yushmat, Pakshachaya Samedhitan, Vipatkanad Vishakhinyadir, Mochitaya Samatrikaha, Yudhishthir Uvacha, Api Smartha no Yushmat, Pakshachaya Samedhitan, Vipatkanad Vishagnyadev, Mochitayat Samatrikaha. Yudhishthir Uvacha. Maharaj Yudhishthir said, Api, whether, Smaratha, you remember, Naha, us, Yushmat, from you, Vaksha, partiality towards us like the wings of a bird, Chaya, protection, Samedhitan, we who were brought up by you, Vipat Ganat, from various types of calamities, Visha, by administration of poison, Agni Adehe, by setting on fire, Mochitaha, release from, Yat, what you have done, Sir, along with Matrikaha, our mother. Translation by Swami Graha Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhishthira said, my uncle, do you remember how you always protected us along with our mother from all sorts of calamities? Your partiality, like the wings of a bird, saved us from poisoning and arson. purport. It's a long purport, so it's two long paragraphs. Just pay attention. Due to Pandu's death at an early age, his minor children and widow were the object of special care by all the elderly members of the family, especially Bhishma Dev and Mahatma Vidura. Vidura was more or less partial to the Pandavas due to their political position. Although Dhritarashtra was equally careful for the minor children of Maharaj Pandu, he was one of the intriguing parties who wanted to wash away the descendants of Pandu and replace them by raising his own sons to become the rulers of the kingdom. Mahatma Vidura could follow this intrigue of Dhritarashtra and company, and therefore, even though he was a faithful servitor of his eldest brother Dhritarashtra, he did not like his political ambition for the sake of his own sons. He was therefore very careful about the protection of the Pandavas and their widow mother. Thus he was, so to speak, partial to the Pandavas, preferring them to the sons of Dhritarashtra, although both of them were equally affectionate in his ordinary eyes. He was equally affectionate to both the camps of nephews in the sense that he always chastised Duryodhan for his intriguing policy against his cousins. He always criticized his elder brother for his policy of encouragement to his sons. And at the same time, he was always alert in giving special protection to the Pandavas. All these different activities of Vidura within the palace politics made him well known as partial to the Pandavas. Maharaj Yudhishthir has referred to the past history of Vidura before his going away from home for a prolonged pilgrim's journey. Maharaj Yudhishthir reminded him that he was equally kind and partial to his grown-up nephews even after the Battle of Kurukshetra, a great family disaster. Before the Battle of Kurukshetra, Dhritarashtra's policy was peaceful annihilation of his nephews, and therefore he ordered Purochana to build a house at Varanavat. And when the building was finished, Dhritarashtra desired that his brother's family live there for some time. When the Pandavas were going there in the presence of all the members of the royal family, Vidura tactfully gave instructions to the Pandavas about the future plan of Dhritarashtra. This is specifically described in the Mahabharata, Adi Parva 114. He indirectly hinted, quote, "A weapon not made of steel or any other material element can be more than sharp to kill an enemy, and he who knows this is never killed." End of quote. That is to say, he hinted that the party of the Pandavas was being sent to Varanavata to be killed. And thus he warned Yudhishthir to be very careful in the new residential palace. He also gave indications of fire and said that fire cannot extinguish the soul but can annihilate the material body. But one who protects the soul can live. Kunti would not follow such indirect conversations between Maharaj Yudhishthir and Vidura. And thus, when she inquired from her son about the purport of the conversation, Yudhishthir replied that from the talks of Vidur, it was understood that there was a hint of fire in the house where they were proceeding. Later on, Vidura came in disguise to the Pandavas and informed them that the housekeeper was going to set fire to the house on the 14th night of the waning moon. It was an intrigue of Dhritarashtra that the Pandavas might die all together with their mother. And by his warning the Pandavas, escaped through a tunnel underneath the earth, so that their escape was also unknown to Dhritarashtra. So much so that after setting the fire, the Kauravas were so certain of the death of the Pandavas that Dhritarashtra performed the last rites of death with great cheerfulness. And during the mourning period, all the members of the palace became overwhelmed with lamentation. But Vidura did not become so, because of his knowledge that the Pandavas were alive somewhere. There are many such instances of calamities, and in each of them Vidura gave protection to the Pandavas on one hand, and on the other he tried to restrain his brother Dhritarashtra from such intriguing policies. Therefore, he was always partial to the Pandavas, just as a bird protects its eggs by its wing. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare So we are at the beginning of chapter 13. Dhritarashtra quits home. So in this verse, Maharaj Yudhishthir is speaking with his uncle, Mahatma Vidura, and he is expressing his gratitude to him for how he helped Maharaj Yudhishthir, his brothers and his mother during their whole life pretty much. So he's expressing his gratitude to him, and we heard in the previous verses how all the residents of Hastinapur headed by Maharaj Yudhishthir, they were very jubilant upon seeing Mahatma Vidura, because he was returning to Hastinapur after a prolonged pilgrim's journey. So we know how Vidura was insulted by Duryodhan, and he left the palace. He took that as arrangement of the Lord, and he went and left the palace and went for pilgrimage, extended pilgrimage. So now he has come back, and they all are very. He has come back specifically to deliver Dhritarashtra. That's his main motive. So here, Maharaj Yudhishthir is expressing his gratitude to him. And that's a very important quality which for Vaishnavas to develop and to have, because we should appreciate whoever has helped us in our Krishna consciousness to whatever degree. And if we have that quality, then it becomes easier to stay on the path of bhakti and to continue nicely. And here in this verse we're hearing how Maharaj Yudhishthir is saying that how Mahatma Vidura was partial to them. Though from in the purport it's mentioned that he was equally affectionate to both the camps of nephews, in the sense that he always chastised Duryodhan for his intriguing policy against his cousins. So from from the point of view of Vidura, Mahatma Vidura, he was seeing the Kauravas and the Pandavas equally. Because he had a very intimate relationship with both. But at the same time, he knew that the Pandavas, headed by Maharaj Yudhishthir, it was their rightful claim to the throne. And also the Pandavas were fatherless. Maharaj Pandu died at a young age. That pastime is there in the Mahabharata. And therefore, you know, Kunti became a widow. So naturally that kind of affection will be there. If someone is very helpless, then of course if someone, we have a blood relation with someone, then there is affection there. Naturally there. Also, if someone is very helpless, then one is affectionate. So Mahatma Vidura could see that they don't have a father, and though they were under the care of Dhritarashtra, who took them under his wings, under his shelter, but he knew the real intention of Dhritarashtra and his sons. So he knew though he was giving them shelter, but in one sense he wasn't really giving them shelter. Because he wanted his sons headed by Duryodhan, they wanted to get rid of the Pandavas so Duryodhan could become the king. And we have heard in various ways they tried to annihilate the Pandavas. And Dhritarashtra was supporting that. So Vidura knew that. And therefore he would always tip off the Pandavas what's about to come. So and also because the Pandavas were great devotees, so he was very affectionate towards them. Whereas Duryodhan wasn't really a devotee. He was more or less an enemy of the Supreme Lord. So this kind of partiality is even exhibited by Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 9:29, Mam hi partha. No, how does that verse start? 9:29. No. Krishna says, I'm equal to everyone, no one is my friend. Samaham sarva bhuteshu, thank you. Samaham sarva bhuteshu, name dveshya asti na priyaha, ye bhajante tumam bhaktya, maite teshu japiham. So, Krishna says, I am equal to everyone, and no one is my friend. But one who renders, service unto me in devotion is in me and I am in him. So, it seems like Krishna is contradicting himself. He says, one hand he says, I'm equal to all. No one is my friend, no one is my enemy. But then Krishna is siding with his devotees. So, that's very natural, because if someone is very, very dear to you, like Prabhupada gives the example of a king. So the king sees everyone equally, all the citizens in his state, all the residents in his kingdom, he sees them equally, whether it's the plant or all the human beings. But at the same time, he'll have special affection for his own family members, for his own sons or daughters. So in the same way, everyone is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but one who renders devotional service, they have like an intimate relationship with the Lord. So Krishna is naturally partial towards them. So that was also another reason why Mahatma Vidura, he was in a sense partial towards the Pandavas, because they were also devotees. And we know of the five Pandavas, one of them is Bhima. And today is the appearance day of Madhvacharya. And Madhvacharya is an incarnation of Vayu. So in Satya Yuga or Treta Yuga? Yeah, in Treta Yuga, Vayu incarnated as Hanuman. Then in Dwapara Yuga, he advented as Bhima. And in Kali Yuga, he advented as Madhvacharya. So Madhvacharya is also an incarnation of Vayu. And in this section we are reading about the Pandavas, and Bhima is none other than Vayu. So it's we have these four sampradayas. There are four bona fide ways of connecting to the Supreme Lord Krishna. So those four sampradayas are the Sri Sampradaya, the Kumara Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, and the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So the Sri Sampradaya is coming from Lakshmi Devi, the founder Acharya is Lakshmi Devi. And the main Acharya in that Sampradaya is Ramanujacharya in the Sri Sampradaya. And then we have the Kumara Sampradaya coming from the Kumaras. And there the main Acharya is Nimbarkacharya. And then the Rudra Sampradaya, which comes from Lord Rudra or Lord Shiva, main Acharya is Vishnu Swami, or also some say Vallabhacharya. And then we have the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So it's here, of course, we know it's coming from Brahma, and the main Acharya is Madhvacharya. So it's, therefore it's Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Madhva stands for Madhvacharya. And we are called Gaudiyas because because we are connected to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is from Gauradesh, so therefore we are Gaudiyas. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master was Ishwarapuri, and Ishwarapuri's spiritual master was Madhavendrapuri. So there is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was connected to Madhavendrapuri, and that, you know, Madhavendra, and that ultimately, if you pick up the Bhagavad Gita, it's called the disciplic succession, and that's going all the way back up to Krishna. So that's going all the way back to Madhvacharya, and then Madhvacharya, then next is Vyasadeva. So there, it seems there's a big gap between Vyasadeva and Madhvacharya in terms of years. Sorry? It doesn't say there. So after Vyasadeva it's Madhvacharya. Is that right, Govan? So though it seems there's a very big gap in terms of years, one might ask, okay, you know, disciplic succession means there's, like Prabhupada's guru was Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, then he had his guru, like that. So you can follow the lineage. But here we see there's a big gap between Vyasadeva and Madhvacharya. So it's mentioned, and I was speaking to Gopalendra Prabhu yesterday, he was also explaining that. It's mentioned that Madhvacharya met Vyasadeva at Bhadrik Ashram. And there Madhvacharya presented a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. And Vyasadeva approved of that commentary, and he took Madhvacharya higher up in the ranges and to meet Naranarayan. And Lord Naranarayan asked Madhvacharya to write a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Srimad Bhagavatam was being misinterpreted. So we see there is that connection between Vyasadeva and Madhvacharya also. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was connected to the Brahma Madhva Sampradaya through Madhavendrapuri. And from Madhavendrapuri's time, there was a significant change in our Sampradaya in terms of the teachings. Till then, you know, love of Godhead in Ragatmika Bhakti was unknown to the Vaishnavas, to the Vaishnav world. It was unknown. So from when Madhavendra Puri's time onward, this ecstatic love for Krishna followed by the residents of Vrindavan was known to the world, especially Madhurya Leela. So till then, bhakti was practiced more or less in awe and reverence. But from Madhavendra Puri's time, you know, that came. So in that sense, the Gaudiya Sampradaya is like the fifth Sampradaya in that sense. And we also see how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he connected himself to a Sampradaya. Though the Supreme Lord, he doesn't need a Sampradaya. You know, his Supreme Lord is all independent and all knowing. He doesn't need to connect to a Sampradaya. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also connected to a Sampradaya to maintain authenticity. Otherwise, if he doesn't connect himself to a Sampradaya, then, you know, then ISKCON might not be considered bona fide. Though Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord. So he also connected himself to a Sampradaya. And to set the right example for all of us. And to maintain the tradition also on the teachings. So so the four Sampradayas are compared to four ropes. The material world is compared to a well. And the living entity, the jiva, has fallen into this well, dark well of material existence. We hear this in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the jiva has fallen into the dark well of material existence. And these four sampradayas are like the four ropes by which the living entity can extricate oneself from the well of material existence. So these are four ways, four exits of getting out. So if anyone wants to connect to Krishna or connect to the Lord, they have to connect through these four sampradayas. And that's how one can, Vaishnava sampradayas, one can come out of this material world. And if we go to Mayapur at Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's mutt, you'll find the deities of the four sampradaya acharyas. I remember a few years ago we went, I think both of us went together, and there we saw the deities of the four sampradaya acharyas. And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj established these deities to establish that Vaishnavism is bona fide. It's not something bogus. And also to prove that his path was bona fide because it's connected to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we find Madhvacharya also there, and all these four deities are there. So as we know, there is the Mayavad school, and then there's the Vaishnava school. So though there are the Mayavad school and the Vaishnava school are totally opposite to each other. there's two classes of transcendentalists. There's the Mayavadis and then there's the Vaishnavas. And we are opposed to each other. And Prabhupada also in his purports very strongly criticizes the Mayavad philosophy. But at the same time, we have something in common. There are two things in common between us and the Mayavadis. So those two things are, both of us, we accept the Vedas. So the Mayavadis also accept the Vedas, and the Vaishnavas also accept the Vedas. Whereas the Buddhists, they don't accept the Vedas. The Buddhists reject the Vedas. And both the Mayavadis and the Vaishnavas, they both accept that there is a higher reality. There is the higher, ultimate, absolute reality. Now the understanding of that reality totally differs. But at least both accept there is a higher reality and both accept the Vedas. So these are the only two things we have in common. But apart from that, there is a whole lot of differences. On a lot of things we totally disagree. Whereas with the Buddhist school, they reject these two things also. And we know when Lord Buddha advented, he basically rejected the Vedas. Buddha said, "I reject the Vedas because animal sacrifices were being performed in the name of Vedas." To basically facilitate meat eating. So he said, "Okay, I reject the Vedas." And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the nine principles of Buddhist teaching are explained. And Srila Prabhupada in his purport, he counteracts all those nine principles of Buddhist teaching. So if you want to defeat Buddhism, just open Chaitanya Charitamrita and read that purport by Srila Prabhupada. You can easily smash Buddhism. So I'll just mention those nine principles. And if you want to know how to counteract them, you can read Chaitanya Charitamrita. And all these nine principles are basically, it doesn't make any sense. So number one is, the creation is eternal. Number two, therefore, because the creation is eternal, therefore there's no need to accept the creator. Number three, the cosmic manifestation is false. Number four, I am is the truth. Number five, there is repetition of birth and death. Number six, Lord Buddha is the only source of understanding the truth. Number seven, the principle of nirvana or annihilation is the ultimate goal. So here we see that this is you know, the main teachings of Buddhism, that nirvana is the ultimate goal, annihilation. Everything is void. Everything is an illusion. Then number 8, the philosophy of Buddha is the only path. Number 9, Vedas are compiled by human beings. And then pious activities and so on are advised. So these are the Buddhic principles, and Srila Prabhupada, he counteracts all of them with very simple arguments. So the Buddhist philosophy is more or less everything is an illusion and everything ultimately is void, and the whole idea is to achieve nirvana. So whereas with the Mayavada philosophy and Vaishnava philosophy, there are these two things in common, but also there are a lot of differences. So the differences are the Mayavadis, they only accept the Shruti as evidence. They don't accept the Smriti as evidence. Whereas Vaishnavas accept both as evidence. And we see the Mayavadis, like Shankaracharya and other Mayavadis, they have commented on the Vedanta Sutra with the Shruti. But they haven't commented on the Smriti, because it's very difficult to comment on the Smriti. Like it's very difficult to comment on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Srimad Bhagavatam directly establishes the personal aspect of the Lord. Though it's there in the Vedanta Sutra also, but it's easier to give an impersonal commentary on that, because it is in codified form. Whereas Srimad Bhagavatam is very difficult to establish impersonalism. And they more or less reject the Smriti. Though Srimad Bhagavatam is compiled by the same author, Vyasadeva, who compiled the Vedanta Sutra. And that's the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. But still, they don't place a lot of emphasis on the Srimad Bhagavatam. But they place a lot of emphasis on Shruti. So that's one difference. Another difference is how the Absolute Truth and the material world is viewed. So their understanding of the Absolute Truth, the highest aspect of the Absolute Truth is that it is impersonal in nature. Or the Absolute Truth is the Brahman, it is the light. Whereas the Vaishnava understanding is, it's not only the light, but the light comes from the body of the Supreme Lord. So that's also correct, but then you have the Paramatma understanding and the Bhagavan understanding. So they view all variety in the material world as an illusion. So that's their explanation. All the variety we see in this material world is more or less an illusion. And everything is one. So in the ultimate stage of like liberation and knowledge, there is no variety and differentiation. It's all one. And also the Mayavadis, they do not accept that the Jiva is an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. So whereas in Vaishnava teachings, we understand that our individuality is maintained in past, present and future. So even after we die, our individuality is there and we continue our service. So devotional service is done in past, present and future. And when we get liberation, that's when real devotional service begins. So even in our liberated state, bhakti continues. Whereas the Mayavadis do not accept that. So with them, when the Jiva merges in Brahman and one loses one's individuality. So that's another key difference. So whereas the Vaishnava's teaching is, yes, this material world is real. We see so much variety, all those things are there. But the illusion is when we see the material world as separate from Krishna. That's the illusion. Though the material world is an energy of Krishna, so it is real. Whereas the Mayavadis say, you know, that famous verse, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. That this material world is false. It is illusory. So we say, it is temporary, but this material world is real, because it is the energy of the Supreme Lord. And the illusion is of identifying with the body and seeing everything as separate from Krishna. And we have said Krishna as a person. He is the Supreme Lord, the Bhagavan aspect. But we also see there are differences amongst the Vaishnava Sampradayas also. There are some subtle differences. So we have a lot of things in common in the four Vaishnava Sampradayas, but at the same time there are some subtle differences. So we, all four of us, we agree that the Supreme Lord is a person and he has various names. And all four of us, we agree that the Jiva is eternally a servant of the Supreme Lord. And also it's agreed that real service begins after liberation. So all these things are in common. But then the subtle differences are in understanding the nature of the Absolute Truth and the process of getting to the spiritual world and what happens after liberation. So these are some subtle differences. But the main things are agreed. The Supreme Lord is a person. You know, we are a servant of the Lord. And even after liberation, we render service. So, when 1000 years before Shankaracharya advented, Vishnu Swami appeared. And it said that he propagated Shuddha Advaita Vad, or in other words, pure monism. Hare Krishna. So this Shuddha Advaita Vad is different from Kevala Advaita Vad, which was propagated by Shankaracharya. And then Ramanujacharya, he came, he propagated Vishishta Advaita Vad Siddhanta, or the philosophy of qualified or specific oneness. So this was propagated by Ramanujacharya, in which he said that there is oneness, but in this oneness there is individuality also. So oneness is there, but there is individuality. In other words, there is God, there are his expansions, and there are his energies. So that's what he emphasized on. There is oneness, but there is, at the same time, there is difference. There is God, his expansions, and his energies. So this was like counteracting what Shankaracharya was explaining, which is Kevala's life. Kevala, Shankaracharya's was Kevala Advaita Vad, which basically said Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. The Absolute Truth is impersonal, there is no variegatedness. So whereas Ramanujacharya said, no, the Absolute Truth is a person, is God, and he has his expansions and he has his energies. So we can see how gradually the people were being brought back to the path of Vaishnavism by these acharyas. So then Nimbarkacharya, he introduced Dvaita Advaita Vad, and then Madhvacharya, he introduced Shuddha Dvaita, or only duality. So this is the other extreme of Kevala Advaita Vad, the other extreme of what Shankaracharya propagated. So Madhvacharya, he very greatly emphasized on the distinction between the Lord and everything else. So in other words, he kept intact what Ramanujacharya gave, but he emphasized a bit more on the differences. Or basically, he established the Lord as the Absolute Truth, and he said that all of the truths are dependent on the Absolute Truth. So that was Madhvacharya's main contribution. So there are these five points in Madhvacharya's philosophy. It's there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So number one, he emphasized the difference between the soul and the Lord. So the difference between the Jiva and Krishna, or the Absolute Truth. And then number two, he emphasized the difference between two Jivas, because every Jiva is an individual. Therefore we cannot be the same. So every Jiva is unique in one's individuality. And then he emphasized between the difference between the Jiva and matter, or the Jiva and Prakriti. Aparaprakriti. And then he emphasized the difference between Aparaprakriti and the Supreme Lord. And he also emphasized the difference between material objects which are endowed with different qualities. So this was his main contribution. So he maintained what Ramanujacharya said, but he more or less elaborated on that. So this was like in what Shankaracharya said, this was the exact opposite. So Shankaracharya propagated Kevala Advaitavad, which is absolute truth is impersonal and there is no variegatedness. So everything is one. And so here Madhvacharya is saying the exact opposite. Okay, there is God, there is Jiva, there is a difference between two Jivas, there is a difference between Jiva and matter, and even in matter there are different qualities, and there is a difference between matter and God. So he took it very far to another level. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he established Achintya Bheda Abheda Tattva. So he said there is simultaneous oneness and difference. So he kind of put it all together and he said there's simultaneous oneness and difference. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took it to another level. So we can see how gradually we are being led to the highest. So Udupi is the headquarters of Madhvacharya, and the Madhvas are also called Tattvavadis. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after he took sannyas, he travelled to Udupi, and Udupi is in South India, and he met the sannyasis there of the Madhva school, and he then had a discussion with them. So as I said before, Madhvacharya is the incarnation of Vayu in Kali Yuga, and Madhvacharya, he retained all the qualities of Vayu. So his main qualities was Vayu there was very very physical, he was physically very very strong, and he was very devoted to the Supreme Lord, and he was very scholarly. So we can see in Madhvacharya all these three things are there. He was very devoted, he was very scholarly, and Madhvacharya was very strong. And the purpose of his advent was mainly to counteract Mayavad philosophy. Though Ramanujacharya came before him, and though he propagated his teaching, still the Mayavadis were very strong. And they were making many followers they were making so many followers. So he came to counteract this. And we see Madhvacharya, he in his whole life he engaged in so many debates with the Mayavadis, and he defeated them. And even the Brahmanas in the Madhva school, they're engaging in debate. They're discussing the tattva a lot. So I have this excerpt from a lecture by Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj where he explains some of the pastimes of Madhvacharya. So maybe I can read some of them. So Madhvacharya was born some distance from Udupi. Udupi is a town in southern coastal region of Kannada state of South India. Many of you may have been there. There is a famous temple called Shri Krishna Math there, where there is a deity of Balakrishna that was obtained by Madhvacharya. We'll talk about it shortly. 12 miles away from Udupi, there is a village called Pajakka Kshetra. His father's name was Madhya Geha Bhatt, who was a Brahmana of the Shivali Brahmana community. He would worship Ananta Sheshwar, who was an unusual form of the Lord, in the form of a Shiva Linga, but was actually Lord Vishnu. A Harihara Deity. The Ananta Sheshwar temple is very famous in that part. Just alongside it is another famous temple of Lord Shiva called Chandramauli Ishwara temple. So Madhya Geha Bhatt would regularly visit the Ananteshwar temple, and he would see the Shiva Linga as Lord Vishnu. One day at the time of the auspicious Makar Sankranti festival, thousands of people had gathered at Ananteshwar temple. All of a sudden, one man who seemed to be mentally deranged climbed up the flagpole that was at the entrance of the temple, and he began to shout and scream and spread his hands as if he was a madman. After he had managed to attract the attention of everybody who were all standing and looking up at him, he calmed down and began to speak that very shortly the god Vayu would advent himself here in Udupi, and he will spread the philosophy of pure devotion, and he will refute very strongly and very convincingly the principles of Mayavad as enunciated by the various preachers here in South India. No longer will the devotees of Lord Vishnu have to hear blasphemous statements that the Lord has no form, senses, and so on. Now the devotees will be able to live joyously. Having made this proclamation, the man descended and disappeared into the crowds, and nobody knew who he was and where he went. Such episodes were fairly common at that time in that part of the country, where it is said by folklore that Ananteshwar would enter the body of certain people whom he selected, and he would make proclamations or make prophetic statements. So Madhya Geha Bhatt was one of those who were there in that assembly at that time, but little did he know that he would be the father of this child. Soon he was married to Vedavati Devi, a very chaste and young lady from a Brahmana family. Both were very devoted. They did not have an offspring for some time, so they decided to perform austerities to please Lord Ananteshwar. They fasted on milk and so on for 12 long years. They would go on daily to Ananteshwar temple. At the end of 12 years, finally they had a son. At that time of his appearance, there were all auspicious symptoms that appeared. The astrologers came and they were astonished to see an exceptional horoscope. The child also had 32 symptoms that a great personality has. They all prophesied that he would be a great personality just like Bhima and Hanuman, and that he would very strongly preach the principles of pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. Madhya Geha Bhatt was very happy to hear this, and so he celebrated a festival and many, many people came. As much as he could afford, he gave away things in charity and so on. He was an exceptional child. Right from childhood, there were all kinds of miracles that happened. Soon after the prescribed period, when the contamination period was over, then Madhya Geha Bhatt decided to take the child, Vasudev, to Ananteshwar temple. There were some people with him as he went. On the return journey, after having went and shown the child to Ananteshwar and let the child have darshan of Ananteshwar, they got late and it was night when they were walking back through the forest back to Vajaka Kshetra. There was a ghost who was living in a tree in the forest, and he possessed one of the people who was accompanying Madhya Geha Bhatt, and it was a frightening situation for them. And Madhvacharya, who was then only a small child, was called Vasudev. He was very helpless, just newborn baby in the arms of his mother. The ghost who had possessed that man began to speak through the man and said, "No other mantras or chanting is going to help you. If you want me to leave this man's body, then place the feet of your child on this man's head." Madhya Geha Bhatt was extremely fearful to do that, but nevertheless he did that. The moment he touched the feet of the child to the man's head, the ghost disappeared. So Madhya Geha Bhatt understood that great things were in store for his son, and that this child was definitely not an ordinary child. Because he was Bhima, he had a voracious appetite, and he would continue to eat and drink all day long. And his mother couldn't keep up to feed him the milk that he needed from her body. Once, when he was still only drinking mother's milk, his mother went out of the house on some errand, and she told her daughter, who was also a very small girl, "Look after Vasudev till I come back. I'll be back in a few minutes." Vasudev began to feel hungry and he started crying. The little girl was perplexed. She did not know how to pacify him, and she also started crying, and she was looking around and her mother hadn't come back. Eventually she did not know what to do. She had to give him something. So there were some sacks of grains that were kept there to feed the bull that was in the house. So she just gave him some grains to pacify him, and very happily he started to eat the grains. Then he ate the whole sack. When the mother came back and she saw what had happened, she was alarmed. And Maharaj says, that may be an understatement. Madhyageha Bhat also came and she said, what is going to happen? He has eaten enough grains, and even a full-grown bull cannot eat. That a full-grown bull cannot eat. Still he seems to be happy and smiling as if nothing can happen. So Maharaj says, the biographer of Madhvacharya, Narayanacharya, mentions that this was the most extraordinary Annaprasana ceremony. Generally, children are given grains and there is a big ceremony, and then one grain is given and then there is a big thing made out of it. So we see that here also in the temple. One grain is hard to give a child, one grain or a few grains. But here he had a whole sack of grains that was meant to be cow fodder. So Madhvacharya did it in grand fashion. Another time, as he was growing up, he asked his father for food. He was constantly asking for food. And his father said, look, there's no food now. I borrowed money from one man to buy a new bull, and this man is waiting on the doorstep. He wants his money, and he will not leave the doorstep until I pay him. But I don't have money to pay him, so I have to fast today. Vasudev said, father, don't worry. I will see that his debt is discharged. So he went into the backyard of the house where there was a tamarind tree. As a child, he would play with these tamarind trees. They are quite shiny seeds. They are quite shiny seeds. Children like to play with them, for those of you who may have seen the tamarind seeds. He got a whole bunch of them, a sack of them, and he called this man and he said, come in, I will give you your payment. And he helped out some tamarind seeds to give him. The man was surprised, but just to humor the child, he extended his palms forward. When they fell into his hand, he saw it had become gold coins. He was struck with wonder, but he did not stay to argue. He fled from there in case the boy changed his mind or something else happened to that, because the value of that gold was much more than the value of the bull. After some time, he came back and thanked Madhyageha Bhat, saying, your son has given me so much payment, much more than what I gave you, and it is also enough to cover all the interest and everything for the very, very late payment that you are making me. So Madhyageha Bhat was astonished when he heard the story. One by one, pastime like this began to unfold. Actually, when he was only about 3.5 years old, his parents had gone off to some other place. He disappeared from the midst and walked 2.5 kilometers to Ananteshwar temple and came back. Actually, they had to go there to find him because he disappeared. 3.5-year-old child finding his way through a forest and going to Ananteshwar temple. So his father was in constant anxiety about where the child would be, because he had this nature of moving everywhere, which children have. He was also very precautious. He was a genius child from childhood. Even at that age, around 4 or so, when Vidyarambha was done, the process where the child is made to write some alphabets for the first time, it's a samskara, he learned it just by hearing it once. Whenever his father asked him to recite the syllables one after the other, he said, father, don't make me repeat, I know it. Because one time he would hear it and he would remember it. And the father was astonished to see the intelligence of this boy. This went on like this. Very quickly, he very quickly grasped everything that a person had to teach him. He was quite a protege. One time he was sitting in a discourse where one Brahmana was speaking on some Purana, and he made some deviations from the original story, and the little boy Vasudev, who was only about 4 years old, raised his hand and said and pointed out some corrections. He said, actually the story is not like this, it should be like that. and he elaborated. Everyone was struck with wonder. He went back home and asked his father, "I spoke like this, the Pandit was saying like that. Was I correct?" And the father said, "Yes, you were correct. Your version was right." One time he even corrected his father, who was speaking on the Srimad Bhagavatam. There was a verse in which he was describing different types of trees, like the banyan tree, the neem tree, the mango tree, and so on. He missed out one tree, the likucha tree. Likucha. He asked the father, "Father, you missed out something. You missed out the likucha tree." And the other people that were listening said, "Yes, yes, please explain to us what this is." And Madhyageha Bhatt could not answer. Young Vasudev said, "Actually, my dear father, you are just a pretender. You don't even know about this. This likucha tree is actually a lemon tree." Madhyageha Bhatt was astonished. Every day such pastimes would take place, and Madhyageha Bhatt understood how exceptional his son was. Normally, the sacred thread ceremony in traditional Brahmana homes takes place when the child is about 8 years old. But understanding the nature of the boy, how precocious he was, they had it at 5 years. Very quickly, he mastered all the rituals, the mantras that a Brahmana is supposed to do, including the Sandhya Vandanam prayers, chanted the Gayatri mantras, and so on. He seemed effulgent. One time he was playing with his friends on a nearby hill, and there was a huge snake who was in his previous life a demon called Maniman, whom Bhima had killed. He wanted to reap vengeance and appeared as a snake and wanted to kill Madhvacharya. He pounced on Madhvacharya and he bit him. The children fled in fear to tell the elders. Meanwhile, the young Vasudev simply put his toe on the head of Maniman and killed him. Today, if you go to Pajakshetra, some distance away from the house, Madhvacharya's house is still there. There is a depression in the stone where you actually see the impression of the toe of Madhvacharya as he crushed the head of that snake. So that stone is still there and there's a depression in it. His mother, Vedavati Devi, became very anxious and she was calling out loudly for him. He heard her from a large distance and in just one jump reached her, because after all he is Vayu. So Vayu did not have a problem. He just leaped and came in front of his mother. There are numerous such instances and episodes, but of course time does not permit us, Maharaj speaking. So now Maharaj is going to the section where he took sannyas. He was only 12 years old. The spirit of renunciation blazed brightly in his heart. His father was heartbroken when he saw that he was associating with Achyuta Preksha, a Vaishnava sannyasi, who was living nearby. This is the anxiety for all parents. Sons take brahmacharya or sannyas. Still going on. He approached Achyuta Preksha and said, "Please don't give my son sannyas. He is my only son." One time, however, Madhvacharya, or rather Vasudev, was preparing to take sannyas. Madhyageha Bhatt heard this and he came running and he pleaded with his son, "Please, we are alone, we are old, we have no one to look after us." Finally, Madhvacharya replied, "All right, I'll stay till such time you have another son." So he postponed his sannyas ceremony. Within a few months, his mother was pregnant again and there was a son, and as per the agreement, his mother had to give the blessings. The father was still unwilling. The father actually even fell at his feet, and Vasudev replied, "This is your blessing, because a father will never fall at the feet of his son unless he is a sannyasi." So eventually the father relented and he went and took sannyas from Achyuta Preksha. He was called Purna Pragya Tirtha. He was very brilliant. He established many conclusions. He defeated many great scholars in debates. He especially engaged in debate with the Mayavadi scholars. In those days, there was a custom in these debate competitions. Just like nowadays, we have Olympics and physical sports. In those days, they had these debate contests in which great scholars would come together and debate on very abstract philosophical points. There was a proper method. There would be judges and people would judge who was the winner. So he defeated all these great Mayavadi scholars. So now Maharaj is going further into his life. So I would just like to speak about the Udupi temple itself. One time he felt joyful within himself and understood that something special was going to happen. Something really wonderful was to happen. By this time he was as much elder in age and he decided to walk to the beach. He walked there at night and he stayed there. Soon there was a huge storm. There was a boat that was there. The boat got stuck in the coral reef. The people in the boat were in great anxiety. They called out for help. Madhvacharya took his sannyas staff, tied his upper cloth to the end of it, and waved it to control the air, and he breathed in deep. Lo and behold, what happened? The storm subsided, and the boat was pulled in towards the shore, away from the coral reef. The captain of the ship, who was a merchant, was very grateful. He came forward to Madhvacharya and offered him whatever dakshin or gift he wanted. Madhvacharya was not interested in that. He asked him, "Where are you coming from?" Captain said, "Dwarka." Then Madhvacharya said, "Do you have Gopi Chandan?" Captain said, "Yes, indeed I do. In fact, we have lots of it. We use it as a ballast. You know what a ballast is?" Yes, that's right. It's a heavy weight at the bottom of a ship to balance it so it doesn't topple over. Yeah, that's correct. So there was a lot of ballast, so he went and said, "Let me choose it." So he went down and he selected a particular block of chandan. There were many sailors in that boat, Narayan Acharya, and the biographer says that 50 sailors couldn't lift it, but Madhvacharya leant over and lifted up like Hanuman was lifting the Gandham Madana hill. The sailors were dumbstruck. They couldn't understand how this sannyasi could do such a thing. He carried his Gopi Chandan back, which was very, very heavy. As he was walking back, one part of the Gopi Chandan broke off and fell to the ground. And miraculously, it revealed the deity of Balaram. He installed the deity there in the temple. That place is called Malpe. This temple still exists there. Lord Balaram's deity is still there. Unfortunately, many of the modern Madhvas don't accept Balaram as the Supreme Lord. They think that he is a Jiva. That is another issue. But anyway, the temple of Balaram is there. So maybe I'll read another couple of pastimes and end there, because there are many more pastimes here. Unless you want to hear them all. Then he went on near the Ananteshwar temple, and there was a small lake there. He placed the chandan in that lake. The chandan dissolved, and again from that there emerged a deity of Krishna. Actually, as Madhvacharya had been walking to the sea and back, he composed his famous Dvadasha Stotram, 12 prayers in glorification of Krishna. He completed the composition on the way back when he was carrying the Gopi Chandan. So this deity of Krishna was a form of baby Krishna, who was standing in one arm carrying a rope to bind the cows, and the other hand a cow herding stick. So he installed the deity there, and many people came forward after seeing this miracle. But he just preferred to build a small temple because he didn't want to have a temple of Anandeshwar and Chandramaulishwar eclipsed by this temple. And also because he did not want it to become for people to take trouble to come stand in line and take darshan and so on. Since then, the Sri Krishna Math in Udupi started. There's a nice history that comes down from oral tradition of these deities Krishna and Balaram. So anyway, I'll just read the last two paragraphs and then we'll end there. So I'll read about Madhvacharya's disappearance. Madhvacharya's disappearance was equally dramatic. He was sitting at the Ananteshwar temple giving a lecture on his lifelong favorite scripture, the Aitreya Upanishad, and he decided the time had come for him to depart. Even as he was discoursing on the scripture, he suddenly disappeared. So he's giving a lecture and he just disappeared. The asana on which he was sitting The asana on which he was sitting on when he disappeared is still preserved. And when one goes to the Ananteshwar temple, there is a window through which you can look into see that asana. We are not allowed to enter that room. So no one can enter, but you can see that Vyasasam is still there. So on this tithi, on this day approximately 700 years ago, Madhvacharya disappeared. Today is his, the day Maharaj gave this lecture was the disappearance. So today is his disappearance day, and today is his appearance day, and we can pray at the lotus feet of Srila Madhvacharya to bless us with pure devotion to the Supreme Lord so that we can follow in his footsteps and achieve the success of this life. Srila Madhvacharya ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thay Gaura Premanande. Hare Krishna.